Coming up next, another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237.
Welcome to another edition of Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president of Local 237 Teamsters. With us, very special guest. He's back again. Brooklyn District Attorney Eric Gonzalez. Eric Gonzalez is a career prosecutor with more than 25 years of experience in the criminal justice system. DA Gonzalez made history in 2017 when he became New York's first Latino district attorney and one of only a few Latino elected prosecutors in the United States. He was reelected in 2021. Under his leadership, the Brooklyn District Attorney's Office has enacted sweeping reforms to improve equity and efficiency, while also engaging in local communities to maintain the trust and confidence of Brooklyn's 2.8 million residents. The DA is the son of a single mother from Puerto Rico. He grew up in Williamsburg and East New York, Brooklyn. He is the first in his family to attend college. He is a graduate of Cornell University and a graduate of Michigan Law School. He lives in Brooklyn with his wife and three sons. Welcome back to Reaching Out, Brooklyn District Attorney Eric Gonzalez.
Hi, Greg. Thank you for having me once again. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. First question is, give us an update on the state of crime in Brooklyn as we start 2025.
We've made a lot of progress, and it was needed. You know, after COVID, we saw crime rates in New York City really skyrocket. You know, 2020 was a bad year for public safety, and the years after got better. But we were still lagging to where we were before 2018, 2019. Good news for the residents of Kings County of Brooklyn is that in 2024, we surpassed the safest years that we've ever had in terms of gun violence. We had fewer people shot and fewer gun incidents in Brooklyn than ever before. It's the safest year in history. And for someone like myself, whose family was impacted by gun violence, I came into this job saying that I would focus in on gun violence. And I'm so happy to say that we've made tremendous progress taking these shooters off our streets and preventing the retaliatory shootings that happen once the shooting starts in the first place.
There's a perception among New Yorkers that crime is out of control, yet the statistics tell us differently. So how can you tell us the difference between perception and reality? Because I know you got the crime statistics, but, you know, let's take subway crime, for instance.
Yeah, I leave it to the mayor and the police commissioner to put out the actual data because it's their data. They collect it. I have the data, of course, as DA. I know that the number of incidents in the county are actually down. But I don't think it's surprising that New Yorkers are worried about crime. And, you know, there have been a number of high-profile incidents throughout New York City. And those high profile incidents are shocking and cause people to be afraid and fearful. And I'm, you know, although I know that the numbers show less crime in our subways and Brooklyn had the safest year, I am a father of three. My kids ride that subway every day to school. And like every other New Yorker, I think about their safety and their concerns. And so it's not surprising that New Yorkers are afraid. I think that it's important that they listen to the mayor and the police commissioner when they put out these crime stats, but there's still too much crime. We're making a lot of progress, but none of us are satisfied where we're at yet today.
Can you talk to us about mental illness and about the mentally ill individuals who undermine this sense of safety?
Yeah, I think it goes hand in hand in what you just asked me about perception issues. The reality of what we see in many of these high profile and shocking incidents, especially the ones that have taken place on our subway system, have been people with significant and serious mental illness. It's not that we're saying they're mentally ill because they committed the crime, because when they get arrested, we look at their backgrounds and they've been previously committed to hospitals. They've suffered with mental illness their whole lives. And, New York City and New York State has not provided the resources for families to get help for their children when they start to experience mental illness. At some point, they wind up on our subways, they wind up in homeless shelters, and they wind up living on our streets, and they cause people to be afraid, because the sense is, I could be street smart and avoid places I'm not supposed to be late at night, or not wear fancy jewelry, all the things we did when we were growing up to kind of remain safe, but I'm still going to be vulnerable because these people are not attacking me because they want to rob me or something like that. They're attacking me because they're going through their own mental health crisis and incidents. And so, I know the governor announced 1,000 new psychiatric beds. The mayor has also made announcements about putting unprecedented resources into mental health illness. And, we have to make sure that we continue to make sure that people who are suffering from mental illness get these opportunities to get well, and that we support that. And I'm going to say this, as DA, about 40% of the people that I put into our jail system are diagnosed with SMIs, right? Serious mental illness. So this is an ongoing issue to public safety. I am grateful that the governor and mayor are taking it seriously. This should have happened before. And I don't blame people for being worried about it. But I do think with the appropriate amount of time and resources, we'll make a lot of progress there. Greg, I want to just add something to that that seems unrelated to it, but the way we address gun violence in Brooklyn is we understood who we were looking for, like who were the right people that were engaged in gun violence. There's a certain number of the people, like most people aren't going to be engaged in gun violence. It's a very small number of people, probably half of 1% of the population, and we focused on them. We can do the same thing. We know most of the people in our city who have been previously diagnosed with serious mental illness or and in homeless situations, and we should be able to get resources to them. And if we can do that, we can start to bring down these incidents pretty quickly.
That's a very pragmatic approach. Years ago, that we used to have the say Pilgrim Street Hospital, Creedmoor. We had more psychiatric beds, and we had inpatients. And then somebody decided that somebody in state government decided that they were going to have outpatients and save money. The problem was the patients who were mentally ill had nowhere to go, and two, they didn't take their medication.
That's why what the governor and the mayor have now proposed in their budgets are meaningful, because there is solutions to this. This is not a situation that we've never encountered before. We see more of the mental illness cases because we've left these people without the proper care. And I think both of these leaders in government are understanding that it's time to put the care back into people to get them well, and get them off our subways and off our streets like that.
Very good. Very good. You're listening to Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, President, Local 237 Teamsters. With us once again is a very special guest, Brooklyn District Attorney Eric Gonzalez. Is there any more work that we could add to just having 1,000 beds and having more resources? We got to yet to see what those resources mean in terms of policy, but is there anything else that you can do?
I do. I
Okay.
it's something that I spend a lot of time thinking about, Greg, is I can't tell you how many times someone who's gotten arrested, and when we reach out to, the witnesses or victims or family members of the person who's been arrested, that they've said mental illness has been a long-standing problem and older parents who are now caring for 30 and 40-year-old men and women don't know how to get help, or they call the police and there's a police response. We have to make sure that there's an education and prevention plan where people who are trying to care for relatives and neighbors can get the resources, to have the interventions before these things turn violent. Unfortunately, we've seen in our city now on many, many occasions in this in last year in 2024, where a mentally ill child, that's a grown child that's lived in the home with their parents, have killed their parents, have killed siblings. It's an ongoing problem. It's because people don't know how to get help. And so as we start to provide the resources in government, we also need to have an education campaign for doctors and for the police and for others to teach people how to access resources and how to get services, because they're, we just saw way too many of these domestic violence cases, but they weren't the typical DV cases, intimate partner violence. There were people suffering mental health issues, and they got involved in their family, and they wound up killing their family. And unfortunately, even in Brooklyn this past year, there were a couple high-profile people with mental illness who killed their family members, including one Asian man who was a law-abiding, had never been arrested, who killed four people in his house. He killed his mother, his sister, and his two nieces. And these are shocking incidents, but it happens throughout our city, and sometimes it doesn't get the attention it deserves because it doesn't cause people to be afraid the same way that the subway attacks do. But we have to make sure there's an education and prevention plan for families to access help, because those parents and those people have left their loved one in their home. But when that when they when they're not willing to do that, they do wind up back in the subways or in the streets.
Another issue is shoplifting and retail theft. What is your office doing to address this?
Great question. It's a great question because it's one of the things that also causes people to get frustrated with the quality of life in this city. When you go to, the supermarket, or you go, especially our pharmacies, and you can't even get a tube of toothpaste or, deodorant because everything is locked, behind plexiglass, and you have to wait 10 minutes to get help. There's a sense of disorder that people feel, and we understand that, it hurts small businesses, it hurts business, and it's a big problem. So we've recreated a unit in my office that will work with store owners, both the big retail chains, but also the mom and pop smaller stores. To give them different opportunities to protect themselves from the persistent retail theft. So we work with them to identify who's the person that's coming in to the location every time, using video evidence and other things so they don't have to get into a violent encounter with the person in the store. We identify them using social media or using our digital evidence lab, and we will then authorize an arrest of them because we can see them on video stealing the product. So we have the evidence that we need to bring those charges. We've gotten new tools from the government. We can now aggregate value, so we can take something from a misdemeanor and make it a felony. We also have new tools that if they attack a retail worker, we can charge a felony. And so, what we've seen in the county is that this past year in 2024, our larceny numbers, especially the petty larceny, the retail thefts, came down. And we've been working with the police department to identify the repeat offenders. Like much else in our criminal justice system, there's a small number of people who do it over and over. And if you can target that population, you're going to reduce crime. That's what we've done in Brooklyn. And we've developed really strong working relationships with some of our retail organizations, including having a policy now that if they've been advised that they're no longer a willing customer there, the store is saying you no longer can shop here, and if they come back and they steal again, not only will we charge the theft, but we will charge a burglary if they have the proper affidavit. So again, raising the stakes for the repeat offenders.
That's excellent, excellent. But I have just have a feeling if you have an affidavit for one store, does that count for all of the stores? Because they could just move on to another store and start the process all over again.
Yeah, listen, there's always, if people want to steal, there's always going to be a way to figure it out. But what we've done is we've worked with the police department on the list of the most, you know, what the mayor has said, they've been arrested three times or more for the same crime within a couple of months. And we're using those lists to make sure that we focus in on the right people. So we're still going to be fair and treat people, especially young people who maybe go in and, you know, steal a candy bar, steal something. We're not looking to send those people to Rikers Island and incarcerate them. But if you're a repeat offender, if you're targeting, and if you're making your livelihood by stealing from our small businesses and our big businesses, we're going to hold you accountable. And so always thinking about fundamental fairness in our system, making sure that people get second chances, but the repeat offenders have to be dealt with, and that's what we're doing in the county.
Very good, very good. Financial scams are a growing problem. Tell us about these scams and how your office is dealing with them.
Yeah, so it's a problem, right? We've known that people get victimized in a lot of different ways. And a lot of the crime, like the robberies and the burglaries, have come down, but the thieves have figured out other ways to make money. And so for a while, it was check fraud cases and bank fraud cases and credit card identity thefts. And, you know, we've all, probably everyone you know, has at some point had their identification stolen in some capacity. You know, their break-ins to these major companies, they steal your name, your social security number. And what is a new crime and growing crime is they're using cryptocurrency to steal from people. And so I created the first virtual currency unit in New York City, in New York State. It's you know, online, fighting crime online. Looking at people who are taking advantage of people with cryptocurrency scams. There's so many of them, and they're so prevalent. But last year, it's estimated that it grew to a $40 million crime in our city. So these are not small numbers. So we've created a virtual currency unit. It's led by a really solid leader who's become a national figure on how to take down these websites and these scammers, block them from getting the money whenever possible, doing education and prevention, and raising it to New Yorkers, because I will tell you, many of our elders, our senior citizens, they get targeted for a lot of scams, and they're embarrassed to tell their family that they lost money. They don't report it. And so part of this is a big public education campaign to say, don't be ashamed if you got taken advantage of and someone stole from you. Report it so we can hold these folks accountable. Over the last couple of months, we've taken down, you know, well in excess of 40 websites that are out there just stealing your money, converting it to crypto, and then sending it to either Asia or Russia or wherever they're sending the crypto money. Once it goes to these places like China, it's gone forever. And unlike other scams, the bank's not going to pay you back for that. Like, they're not, if the bank, typically, if you get your check stolen and someone cashes it, the bank will often reimburse you. On these cryptocurrency scams, you're just out the money. Growing number, a growing problem. $40 million last year just in New York, over $300 million in the country, and it's growing exponentially. I wouldn't be shocked if it's closer to $60 million or $80 million this year. So the education piece is important. Just know, if you're hearing this and you've been a victim of one of those cases, you can reach out to the Brooklyn DA's office, and we will open up an investigation for you.
Can you give us an example of how someone scams to cryptocurrency, because some of us aren't familiar with that?
There's a number of different scams. Like, sometimes people will reach out to you on dating sites and websites, you know, like a lot of the folks who are dating, a lot of online dating, and you think they're interested in you because of your profile, but quickly, you know, within a day or two of talking to you about, you know, the romantic relationship that's budding, they tell you, oh, you know, I've been making a lot of money on crypto. Feel free, you know, to invest in this. And these scammers are really good. They have really professional websites with, you know, a lot of like documentation that looks legitimate. They'll tell you to download something onto your computer or on your cell phone, and they steal all of your identity, your social security, your passwords, and they take everything you have. They turn it into crypto money like this, and they send it out the country. So this is why there was urgency on my part to create this virtual currency unit, so we can freeze that money so the bad guys can't get it, and hopefully over time, figure out how to get this money back to victims.
Excellent, excellent. When you were here last on the show in 2023, you spoke about your office work on wrongful convictions. Does your
Yeah.
office still work on revisiting wrongful convictions?
We do, and it's such an important part of what a prosecutor's office needs to do. You know, I remember when I grew up in East New York in the 80s and 90s, you know, crime was at all-time highs. The criminal justice system had, you know, thousands and thousands of cases all at the same time. And there were a lot of people who were convicted in that time without some of the reforms that we have today. And what we've seen looking at these cases is that we've gotten it wrong. Prosecutors, judges, defense attorneys, we've gotten it wrong on times, and we've allowed people to be convicted without doing full investigations. And when you fully investigate the case, it becomes apparent that we got it wrong. And sometimes we even identify the true offender, often in homicide cases. And it's heartbreaking because these people have spent decades in jail. We've torn their families apart. We've separated them from loved ones and children. We did not hold the true offender accountable. It's been real failures. And it's especially in communities of color, Greg, it's alienated our citizens from law enforcement and government because they knew that their loved one was wrongfully convicted. So getting these cases right matters. We've vacated 40 cases since the inception of the work, which started under Ken Thompson. But over the last 10 years, 40 individuals, we've gone to court and asked the judge to vacate them, give them back their good name, get them out of jail, and make amends for getting it wrong. And most importantly, and this is why every DA's office needs to do this, those are all the right reasons to do it, because someone who's innocent shouldn't be in jail. But also to make sure that we learn the lessons. How did we get it wrong? How did the police get it wrong? How do we make these mistakes so that we don't repeat the mistakes over and over again? And one of the biggest blessings of the conviction review unit has been teaching young prosecutors how to avoid wrongful convictions from the start.
That's excellent, excellent, excellent from the beginning. The education with the prosecutors not to get it wrong from the beginning is very helpful, and we thank you for that. One minute, do you have anything that we didn't cover that you would like to say just before we sign off?
Not only are we prosecuting the cases, Greg, but the office is investing a lot of resources on prevention. And next time I come back, maybe we can talk about some of the prevention programs, which I think have also helped us reduce crime in Brooklyn faster than the rest of the city.
Oh, sure. We don't have to make it so far and few in between. Next time you're available, you just pick up the phone and say, "Hey, look, I want to come back on," and we'd be more than happy to share your secret with the nation, how you reduce
Yeah.
crime and what
Well,
works.
I'll tell you, prevention is a big
Yeah.
piece of it, because when you stop an incident from happening in the first place, you stop the what I would consider the natural course of action, which is there's going to be retaliation for the person who robbed someone or shot someone. So you do that, but you create a peace dividend. And next time we come back, we talk about the peace dividend. Creating goodwill in communities that haven't had that in a while, that they should stay and remain peaceful. God bless you, Greg, and thank you for having me on.
Yes. Thank you. And that's all the time we have for reaching out. A very special guest was Brooklyn District Attorney Eric Gonzalez. Thank you for coming back on Reaching Out. You're welcome to come back anytime. Thank you.
All right. Take care, everyone.
Thanks for listening. And don't forget to tune in again each and every Saturday at this same time for another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237.